tired, but unfortunately they're sleeping. So let's wake up the lions. Give a call to 427-3772. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, the Santa Cruz Alternative. And now you're going to listen to a little Daryl Churney, and then we'll be right back.
Amongst you that I think would disagree that our treatment of the Navajo is a mighty shame indeed. But in July of 86 another crime shall be, and 10,000 more will lose their homes in this land that we call free. Uranium were discovered beneath the earth, and on a place they call Big Mountain, where the DNA tend their sheep, the corporates at Peabody Coal want to fill their pockets deep. Hey Peabody Coal, you ain't got no soul, you wanna relocate the Navajo. Now there's $10 billion worth of coal beneath that desert sand, and John Boyden was Peabody's lawyer hired to get that land. And so he staged a land dispute to help fulfill his land, and the New York Times and Congress fell down to Peabody's man. And was Senator Goldwater who backed up John Boyden's words, and saw to it in Congress that the elders were not heard. And oh, in steward eat all, they all grabbed their piece of pie, and the Relocation Act was passed to the tune of Boyden's lie.
Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, That was Big Mountain Will Not Fall from I Had to Be Born This Century with Daryl Churney. Anybody who has an update on Big Mountain, feel free to call in. Let us know what's happening on that issue. I haven't heard too much on that recently. It has been an issue that has been very important to a lot of us, though. Well, we were talking, we're in the studio with Phil Free, Just Kidding musician, IWW activist, and talk show host. And we also have a phone call coming in from a man who was pepper gassed on the mall. He actually called us during the song. He wants to be interviewed live on the air. We're going to do that, and we invite him to call in. Phil Free has also been doing a lot of research on this subject, right, Phil? You've been talking to people.
Yeah, I've got to turn my mic off.
Okay.
Yes, hi. I have been researching the subject
indirectly. Free Radio Santa Cruz. Sorry, Phil.
Yes.
Sign in, please.
This is Dave Bob.
Hi, Dave Bob. you're a Food Not Bombs volunteer worker.
Yes.
And how long you been around Santa Cruz?
I was here for a while, for about 3 months. 2 years ago, and then this time around, I've been here since just before Thanksgiving.
And I guess, you know, I heard a week ago that a week ago today,
yeah.
you'd received a pepper gassing from one of the hosts who, though previously notorious for harassing people for sitting down, playing music, hacky sacking, having dogs, and so forth on the mall, they had not yet been notorious for actually going after people with pepper gas or with guns or any other kind of weapons. Presumably they are, even though they are known to be and pride themselves on being the eyes and ears of the police department, we had not yet seen them take this step. So I naturally was very interested. I think we talked at the Wednesday meal, the Food Not Bombs meal. You gave me a recording, and you just called and said you kind of like to kind of update that recording. And you also called during our last program to discuss this issue briefly. And, of course, as you know, in the studio with us is Phil Free, who has been interviewing the hosts involved. And you should also know that Matt, who is the new supervisor for the host, Diane having either retired or died.
Congratulations, Matt.
What?
Congratulations on your promotion, Matt.
Yes. actually, I was impressed with Matt's interest in, you know, being more candid and open about the office and more accessible. But I did tell him that I still would... He would be as likely as the next person to receive my catcalls on the mall for the kind of so-called job he is doing, because it's difficult for the host to do any kind of a job other than a bad job, even if they do a good job. In fact, the better they do it, the worse it gets, I'm afraid. But he wanted you to contact him to give him your story about what was going on, and I, of course, informed him that since you're under charges, you've been accused of battery yourself, that you might not feel too confident about doing that at this time. But... And you should be advised, too, that if you're going to make a statement on the air, they could probably try to use it as evidence against you if they can.
Anything you say or do.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm a news hound, and I'd love to have you talk on the air, but I also am concerned about your rights, so I wanted to let you know that before you begin.
Okay.
But, hey, let it all hang out, big guy. So what's cooking? What happened on that Monday a week ago? Where were you sitting? What was going on? And was there a previous history between you and the host, whose name is John Behrens, I believe, the man who approached you?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. I was sitting in Birch Lane, it's like an alley adjacent to the mall.
Birch Lane is the lane that goes near the Bagelery and the Poet and Patriot, I believe.
I was sitting there minding my own business, mm-hmm. and... the host approached me and basically was trying to give me reasons why I shouldn't be sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
And
were you blocking the sidewalk?
No, I was...
were you harassing women?
I was not even really in the alleyway. I was up against the building.
And were you spare changing in a vicious manner?
No.
Were you stinking drunk?
No.
Were you wearing unfashionable clothing?
Yes.
I was wearing about your average clothes.
Uh huh. But you weren't, for example, your genitalia were not hanging out.
No.
For a change.
So anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm just trying to interject a little levity in the situation.
So this being about the third time that he's harassed me in that same general vicinity. I'm just getting to the limit of my patience, and so this time I stood up, got in his face a little bit, but did not touch him.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess as I was standing up, I didn't really see that he had reached into his pocket and grabbed a canister of pepper gas.
Uh-huh.
And so as I kind of stood there, threateningly close, but within distance, you could say, well, maybe I'm getting in his face.
Mm-hmm.
He squirts me in the left side of the face with his pepper gas.
Did he say anything as he did this?
No.
Did he?
I don't recall him giving me any kind of warning.
No warning? Okay. That in itself is pretty interesting. We'll probably get into that in a second. Go ahead. No warning. I wanted to get clear.
So there was no warning. Go ahead.
Okay.
What did you do then?
At that point, I just kind of moved my shoulders like I might be getting ready to swing, but I didn't intend to.
Mm-hmm.
And we parted ways and just settled out at that point.
Was anybody watching this incident, D-Bub? Any witnesses?
The person, he's probably a tenant there at that building. I remember seeing him go inside just afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a person that claimed that he watched it. I don't recall seeing him. Of course, he might have been on the mall end of Birch Lane. I didn't really pay attention to who was behind me.
Now, so you then, what did you go wash your face off or something? What? How did you deal with that pepper gas?
Later on, when it really started burning, I started dousing it with cold water.
Now, you essentially had no words to him. Did you curse at him after that? Were you angry with him? Did you say anything to him after he left or as he left?
I don't recall saying much of anything after I got the gas in my face. I didn't really.
Did he? And he didn't say anything either, huh? That you remember?
I can't recall it in that full of detail as far as words that were said.
So
I just know that his claim about being shoved is very fabricated.
So, and now that claim came up, I believe, on, what was it, on Friday when you were informed that there was a battery complaint against you?
Okay. On Wednesday afternoon.
Wednesday afternoon.
Downtown host John filed a fabricated charge of battery against me, and he, along with two police officers, stopped me on the corner of Cathcart and Pacific. I was issued a citation and released on my own recognizance. It seemed like the reason John Leiter fabricated this charge was to cover his own ass and his job by making me appear to be the perpetrator. It was only after I was blowing his actions public on the mall that he decided to file the charge.
Mm-hmm. Now, you had made a statement prior to that, but you had not actually filed a complaint with the police department?
I hadn't really talked to anybody about it until that Wednesday afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand, didn't you give a statement to Free Radio Santa Cruz reporter on this issue?
Monday night.
On Monday night, yeah. I think that's where I first heard about it.
Yeah, so we couldn't get the host to call in at that time. We also sent somebody from the show over to the host's office to get them to tune in or to get them to comment. No, we were unable to raise any comment. No, we did try.
So, have you had any further encounters with John in the last week, the host?
I haven't even seen him on the mall since I made the statement on Wednesday, so.
Has this deterred you from being on the mall? I mean, are you now afraid to be there, or how are you feeling?
Not at all. I'm not afraid.
I as well have not seen John on the mall, and I've been working full-time every day that the rain hasn't been happening, so I usually see him.
You know, I
think they made a wise choice and suspended him.
Possibly, although I haven't been informed by Matt that this is the case, although I think he does want to talk to someone about this. I think, what is your court date again? When is it?
February 26th.
Yeah, February 26th. I think that
you know, around that time a week before, you should, you know, if you're around, give us a call and give us, you know, remind us it's coming up, and you have people in court supporting you. And remember, you can appear at an arraignment and make a plea without subjecting yourself to any kind of further difficulty, as far as I know. So, I mean, you're not in danger of jail at that time. So in case you decide you wish to contest this, even to the extent of showing up for that arraignment, you can do that.
Yes.
Well, now, Phil, actually, what I had heard secondhand was that you... what's your view on this? I'm not going to say what I heard secondhand.
I went out seeking the host in question. I had an idea who it was, so went out seeking him Tuesday morning, so I guess it was the morning after the incident, when it would be a little more fresh in his mind. I found John the host, talked to him about it, and found out that he was in fact the host that had maced him. Before I go any further, I would like to say that the law stipulates that a person cannot be recorded if they have a reasonable expectation of privacy. I spoke to John in front of two witnesses on a street, and I did have a tape recorder running in my pocket, and I do not believe that he had a reasonable expectation of privacy. Matter of fact, I think he knew that he had no privacy, because on the tape you can clearly hear him say, "Well, Phil, I don't know if I should talk to you, because I don't know how far this will go." And I said, "Yes, John, you don't know how far this will go." But then he decided to talk to me again anyways, and just started rambling off. I will probably, I'll see about airing that tape again tonight. Got to mix it together and get it, get the sound quality up a little better so you can hear it. But the whole story is pretty much there, and I'll run it down. All parties agree on a couple things. You know, all parties agree that D-Bob was maced. All parties agree that he was standing. Then we get into the assault charge and the battery charge. When I talked to John, he said that that D-Bob was going to assault him. He said was going to assault him. He did not say that he pushed him. He made pretty clear statements to indicate that he was not pushed. Said he felt that he was going to be assaulted. It is my understanding that D-Bob has been charged with battery. It's my understanding as well that battery is a successful assault. Battery is the actual contact from the assault, and the story I hear now is that D-Bob has been charged with pushing him, and then he got maced. This was later that John put this together. I don't know who he talked to and how he got this story together, but when I talked to him, he did not give the impression that he had been batteried. That seems to have come up later. So in this kind of case, we would have D-Bob's word against John's, but in comes element number three, the independent witness that was interviewed by Skidmark Bob of Free Radio Santa Cruz, also a tape that we have plenty of copies of. The only witness to the incident supports D-Bob's side of the story. He does say that D-Bob is standing. He did not see a motion towards John. Definitely said as he was in a position where he could have seen if John had been pushed by D-Bob, and he did not see that. So now the only evidence we have points towards D-Bob's side of the story, I should say.
So what do you think of that, D-Bob?
Well, I'm glad he was there. I know that in the case of a city worker's word against another citizen's...
it's difficult.
They usually would like to take the city worker's side. Does he have the classification as city worker? They said it was a private citizen's arrest. So.
Well, that's an interesting thing, too. I do know for a fact that John the host is employed by First Alarm Security. I believe that the host program is somehow run. They are at least trained by First Alarm Security. I do not know if they are all employed by the same organization. This is one that I've been researching for a while, because I think we got police abuse in this country, but we've also got these other little types of fascism that are somewhat unaccountable, private police forces that business owners can have at their beck and call, that the citizens don't have recourse when they step out of the line of authority, which, let me point out, they have no authority. Anybody employed as a security guard in the state of California has the authority to observe and report. Matter of fact, that's their job description, and that's their only job description. They can defend themselves, and that's the only thing. They can enforce no laws. They are not empowered by the people of the state to do anything but observe and report. However, First Alarm has a policy of encouraging their officers to play cop. They tend to employ people that are wannabe cops, in my opinion, people that couldn't get on the police department for one reason or another. Maybe they couldn't pass the psych test or something. A lot of security guard companies have this problem, but First Alarm is by far one of the worst in this. They have these little wannabe cops running around in these very cop-looking cars with very copish equipment. A lot of people, although the company allegedly has a policy against it, a lot of the employees carry scanners in their cars and try and jump police calls. I know this from experience, and I won't tell you how I had that experience. I'll leave that for the authority figures to figure it out. But I do know this about First Alarm, and I do know this firsthand. There's two divisions of the company. There's an alarm division and a patrol division. The patrol division is run by, I believe, an ex-cop and somebody that's still employed as a cop in this county, as a matter of fact. And it's a really scary bunch of people. You got to get a scanner and get their frequency and listen to what these people are out there doing. They're out there playing cop, and they have not been chosen to be cops by the people of California. And we have a problem with cops and all the restrictions we put on people becoming cops in the first place. Think how bad it can be when we have no regulation on these people. These people are unaccountable except to their employer, and the employer doesn't give a shit.
You know, D-Bob, anything more you want to add? Because what I'd like to do is carry on this conversation so we can open the phone lines and let other people call in.
Yeah, let First Alarm call in.
You still there?
Yeah.
Also, I encourage you to call in tonight because apparently on his show from 7:30 to 9, Phil Free is going to have a, he's going to play John Barron's testimony on the streets.
You're talking about a lot of local issues.
And
this is a big one.
And so you might want to be listening to that and be ready to call in with your response if you have any. And of course, you can say whatever you want now. I just want to kind of wind this one up, though, for the moment.
I would just like to make one key point in conclusion.
Sure.
The fact that he did not actually mention battery until he was being put on the spot on the mall when I was pointing at him and saying, this is the one that maced me.
I got you. And please listen to the nighttime show and, carry on this dialogue. And anybody else, by the way, who's been harassed, please call in. Thanks. Goodbye.
So you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm here with my articulate co-host, Phil Free, eavesdropper extraordinaire, fashion model, and jackbooter extraordinaire. Hell no, he hasn't got any jackboots on. He's a man in green today. He's in mufti, as we would say.
Wearing my bank robbing clothes. It's the same clothes that I got accused for bank robbing.
If anybody out there has robbed a bank and wants to discuss it on the air, I would be happy to have that kind of a phone call. Or if anybody there plans to rob a bank and wants to organize it, no, that would be wrong. Phil, you were. I didn't mean to cut you off in your analysis of First Alarm. I just want a lot of phone lines open.
I was ranting anyways. I have plenty of just bitch about those people.
Well, I think that kind of analysis is very important. In fact, I'd like to see more people on the air calling in talking about really the structure of some of the corporations who have a lot of power in our town, ranging from police agencies like First Alarm and PSI to the Seaside Corporation, Rittenhouse and his property situation. Anybody who has a lot of power. I was listening to an interesting tape by Jello Biafra, who's a musician as well as a political commentator, talking about Blockbuster Video being larger than the other 370 competitors combined, some such incredible figure. And, you know, we've got the chains coming in, and I think that once these chains get behind the anti-homeless laws, we thought Neil Coonerty was bad. Well, look out who's coming down the pike. Again, your Free Radio Santa Cruz is at your ear. We're 96.3 FM, and please call us at 427-3772. I'm going to kind of run into a couple more reports here, and Phil, any, of course, any comments or additions you have would be rejected summarily. You know, I mean, would be much welcome.
Fuck you.
And, yes, thank you. Thank you for the blessing, as an old friend of mine in Berkeley used to say. What has been cooking? Well, you might want the update on the Gina case. Gina is a woman who was kicked out of the satellite shelter program in October, filed a complaint at that time, and the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which runs the ISSP, has done nothing. It's given her no hearing, established no process, in spite of repeated calls from Board of Directors member Becky Johnson. We've heard nothing from, pardonnez-moi, Paul Merceau, who is the head of that program. We could, in fact, even call him now, perhaps using our man Phil Free's voice, get him on the line for Free Radio Santa Cruz, and ask what the policy of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless is regarding complaints about the program. Because, after all, if you are kicked out of the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, that's the only legal place to sleep at night, is within the confines of that program. So you become a criminal at night. It's really a sentence for harassment to get kicked out of the program. I'm not saying that Gina was unfairly kicked out of the program. I am saying, however, that she has a right to a series of, to at least one hearing before the board of directors or some subcommittee of that board, and that Paul Merceau's say-so alone should not be sufficient to kick a person out of that program.
Definitely. I saw Gina right after she got kicked out, and I interviewed her the street.
Good.
I saw this person I know walking down the street with everything they own, carrying it. You know, I don't know everything surrounding this case, but to just be kicked out on the street and to be forced to become an illegal person, to be thrown into being a criminal, just on one person's say-so, with no recourse, is ridiculous. And you know, if she was arrested, I think they'd have to arrest that man for conspiracy or something.
Well, actually, you know, in Gina's case, I invited her to come on the air today, and she's apparently given up her request to get back in the program, partially because she's afraid of for her safety out there. And I frankly have got to tell you that my analysis of what Gina did or didn't do, I've come to no final conclusions. I am not a ardent supporter of her, you know, to the hilt, nor am I a person who sides with Paul Merceau and the CCH in their decision to, actually his decision alone, to exclude her from the program. Perhaps we could have you talk to Paul Merceau on the phone. Would you be willing to do that?
I'm not really familiar with the issues.
I
don't know what his policy is.
Yeah, what is the policy for a person who's been thrown out? Who do they appeal beyond to him is really the question.
Okay.
And let's see if we can reach that hard-working guy on the phone. We're calling the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, and we, of course, dialed the wrong number. We'll try another one, hopefully with more success.
Asking for Paul?
That's right, 423. The number, by the way, is 423-2367. Ask for Paul Merceau, who's the head of the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program.
Good morning, ISSP.
Yeah, could I speak to Paul, please?
Just a moment. Who's calling?
My name is Phil.
Tell him you're on the radio.
In regards to what, Phil?
I'm on Free Radio Santa Cruz. We wanted to ask you a couple questions.
So,
Phil?
Yes?
Can I get him a number for a message or where he can contact you?
427-3772.
3772.
Yes, and collect calls from jail will always be accepted.
So it looks like Paul is doing his usual stonewalling number. He hasn't returned a call for a month and a half.
He's there. He's hearing me back. I'm some guy from Free Radio Santa Cruz. Tell him I'm not in!
Yeah. Is that what he said?
You could definitely hear him talking to the person that we wanted to talk
Ron
to in
Howard
the background. I heard it on the headphones. I hope the tape picked it up.
So again, an example of the inaccessibility of the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program. They don't want any public stuff out. Apparently, that embarrasses them. This is too bad, because in the past, Paul has been quite forthcoming about even issues that are somewhat embarrassing. And one has to say that Paul really has, he's taken a lot of flack from me, because he's the man who closed the shelter. He's the man who showed he broke his word to the campers made on November 29th that they'd be allowed to stay essentially until February, or there'd be renegotiation if there was bad weather, and there was no renegotiation. They were just kicked out. He's the man who has really gotten a lot of criticism for his running the program, and some of it quite appropriate criticism. But, you know, the real people to be criticized here are the board of directors of the CCH and the people who are the real power figures there. And those are Mr., I should say, the very Reverend Dr. Paul Lee, who is the head of the board of directors. Daryl Darling, a longtime CCH person, a minister, and who has the bed and board place over on the west side called the Darling House.
Well, you know, I think it's ridiculous to have these people in charge of a homeless problem. Maybe people with houses could find some way of helping the homeless, but to be in charge of the problem and say that they have any knowledge about it and can solve the problem is ridiculous. This is a different class of people, and in my view, I don't think we have a whole lot in common.
Well, of course, that's true, and what we need is people at the class level that we're talking about on the streets and low to organize, and that, of course, is always the hardest thing in the world.
Back and forth, the riff-raff.
Yes, riffing and raffing, and here we are. I think that, I had something I was going to say.
Sure wasn't important.
Probably wasn't important. Right. We got to go. I'm still trying to grab that, but no, the thought is gone. Getting back to the issue of DBOB and the macing, pepper gassing a week ago, I want to point out that a host, Matt, gave me a call. He's now the supervisor on Saturday, and I was rather impressed with his conversation with me. I told him I was going to refer to it on the air. He said that John, the man who did the macing, or the pepper gassing, claimed he was pushed, threatened, there were clenched fists, and that first alarm backs him up entirely. Matt says, in his experience, no host has ever been struck, and that Matt himself has had to walk away from situations. He had to walk away from someone with a fist. And I pointed out to him that that's really the appropriate thing to do. I mean, the hosts aren't being paid for, high-risk work. I don't think they're really adequately trained for that kind of work. And I think that it also is not the purpose for which they were established on the mall. The eyes and ears are one thing, but the fists, feet, and pepper gas canister appliers are another. And they are specifically there to, they're the snitches. I mean, after all, they're not supposed to be there to, carry out the punitive or preventative activity. I mean, unless, of course, any citizen who sees something coming down can always intervene. I commend that.
They have no authority.
You know, one thing we didn't get into was the previous history of harassment between DBOB and John, which he pointed out to me in an interview I did with him. Maybe you can talk to him about this tonight if he calls in, Phil. Anyway, I talked further with Matt. Matt just, on the same day that DBOB was pepper gassed, Matt got his new position as supervisor, and Diane, the previous supervisor, apparently has moved on to the happier hunting ground, whatever that may be.
Oh, I miss her.
Matt Gray is again the name of the new supervisor, and now Matt notes he's a songwriter. He's sort of in your business. He's a songwriter. That's right.
I must say that Matt is the host that purchased, for a donation, of course, the first Hospitality Nazis single that they still listen to in the host office.
Hospitality Nazis, for those of you who may not know, is a song composed by Phil. And Bob, or just Phil?
Me.
Composed by you, which kind of outlines in a satirical form a caustic analysis of what the hosts are actually doing. That is to say, the hospitality program. Hospitality Nazis is the name of the song. And I should add, the last thing I wanted to say about Matt was he feels that Hospitality Nazis is, and I quote, really clever.
Who, Matt is?
That's what he said.
Me and Matt had a discussion about it one time, and I really wish I'd had the tape rolling, but he was, like, really distraught one time, and And we were, you know, discussing things, you know, in the friendly way that we discuss things on the mom. He was going, but Phil, you know, that song of yours, you know, Phil, I'm not a fascist, Phil, and it hurts my feelings that you called me a fascist. And I just to say, you know, you personally may not be a fascist, but you work for a fascist system. That makes you a fascist. If you're just following orders and going along with the program, even if you're involved in the most minute level of fascism, you are a fascist. Even if you just push the paperwork to take people's freedoms away, you're a fascist. Even if you just guard the prisoners in the jail, you're a fascist. If you advocate laws and control and controlling people with this big military arm, well, that's fascism, man. Look it up in the dictionary. It's a very subtler word than we give credit to. So we were discussing it, and you know, I think I made it very clear to him that we're not friends. we're not anything he says or does, I'm going to use against him. On Free Radio Santa Cruz, Matt's a very nice guy. He's a very nice guy, but I will say he's one of the people that first inspired the song. Matt, Diane, and the old gray-haired guy that doesn't work down there
anymore.
Sean,
I believe.
Were some of the original ones. You know,
Steve.
Steve. Matt used to come down, and he used to try and play the cop routine. I'll never forget one of our first Disturbing the Peace tickets that me and Bob got together. Actually, I didn't get cited. Bob tried. The cop was so pissed off at police state and shoplifting and... Stuart Martin was so pissed off, they tried to charge Bob with making terrorist threats.
These were songs that Bob was singing, and Stuart Martin, of course, is
I'm
the...
I was singing them, too, but apparently that wasn't being as offensive.
He's recently been seen shoving a homeless man down the street and saying, all homeless people are thieves.
But it was way back then in the beginning of the host program when you know, Matt was one of the originals. You know, he among others, earned the song. And I don't know, I like to think that it did make some difference. It did make some impact. I mean, they bought a tape and they sat around and listened to it. Every cop on the mall, sometimes while writing me a ticket, have been saying, hey, I like that song of yours. You know, I'm going to listen to it in the host office. Maybe there's been some change between the song and the protests and everything else. These people are changing their ways somewhat.
Well, I would like to see
that seem that way.
Well, I don't know. Interesting. I'd like to get more reports on whether there has been a change. And in fact, if you have any opinions on this subject, do give us a call to 427-3772. This is a call-in talk show on civil rights. And whose civil rights are we talking about? Your civil rights. That's who we're talking about.
Civilians' rights. I don't know if they've made a total change, but I think you know that the attitude. The attitude may be changing somewhat. The blatant plain cop has slowed down a little bit until this John incident. But the thing is, with the host program, their entire business is public relations. You know, the cops, it's harder to affect cops with protest and this kind of thing because they're in power and they don't give a fuck. The hosts still, they have to look nice for people. They're still in the public relations business, and if you mount a public relations campaign against them, it has a lot more effect than a lot of our other political departments. So you should give us a call, 427-3772. I gotta go work soon. I'd like to get the host to call us in. You can always come by and talk to me out on the street. I'll be out there playing the guitar. Take up your issues with me. I'm stalling for time because Robert's queuing up a tape behind me. 427-3772.
I appreciate that. Actually, we're still working on the queue, and while we're working on that cute queuing, a couple of kind of news flashes that I've kind of put aside and want to pass on to you. About 3 days ago, at the previous show, we had a man at the... Taco Bell didn't want to come on the air. He was somewhat intoxicated, but he told us an interesting story that on January 11th, he had been arrested at the Dream Inn. What happened was he was drunk at that time, too. He'd gone in there, and he had taken a shower. And he was arrested in the shower, carried buck naked to the police station, and he showed me a slip that indicated that when he was released, he had no clothing booked. So it really interests me. Wonder what they're doing. Are they issuing paper clothing? I mean, did they give him a bathrobe? He also, however, on a more serious note, noted cops slammed his head on the floor as they arrested him and said there were four of them.
Imagine that.
And he cited one officer, the name was a little illegible, Barney, badge 188, and this was a trespassing ticket due for arraignment on February 4th, so that's coming on up. His name was James Dignino, and I unfortunately, again, I don't have the spelling too clearly here, so we aren't quite making a very accurate documentary record. This is more in the nature of anecdotes. I'd like to point out, if you're interested in doing some work on homeless rights issues, there's something you can do as well as call into the show, which is still available for you, 427-3772. You can also give me a call at HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, certainly. That's at 423-HUF, 423-4833. What we're discussing doing now is setting up a table on the Mall to start getting signatures against the countywide curfew, which is due to be put into place probably in a couple of weeks. It's now currently been voted for in principle by the Board of Supervisors, and we'll be coming back to Supervisors in 2 weeks. More on that after this phone call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hey, I'm calling to talk to Robert. This is Bear.
Oh, hi, Bear. What's cooking, Bear?
I'm just calling you. Thank you. I had a great time going out to breakfast with you the other day and talking to you about some political stuff.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I talked to you about that I do want to get involved, back involved into doing, you know, activist work for the homeless.
Let me tell our audience a little bit about you, Bear. You, as I understand, as I remember, were quite active in 1989 when SWAP, Soup Without a Permit, which was the forerunner of the Free Meal, was serving food at the town clock, and our mayor, now our supervisor, Marty Wormhout, was having us arrested night after night for trying to give away free food to people.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that?
Yeah, and I remember, you know, we had this big thing going on in court, you know, with the permit and the homeless, you know, camping tickets and stuff, and, you know, you guys were in court a lot, and I took the responsibility, you know, to go out and look for food and getting it cooked and bringing it to the town clock and risk getting arrested every day.
Every day.
And I had food taken away from me by the police and threatened to get beat up and going to jail. They were really, you know, being really jerks about it, you know, at that time.
And though the food situation has improved, we still have the same situation around the sleeping ban, mm-hmm. which is there is an expanded ISSP, Interfaith Satellite Shelter program, but there is no campground now anymore, and there is the same law that makes it illegal for you to fall asleep after 11 o'clock at night in the city limits, even on private property, unless you're inside a backyard or enclosed side yard.
Uh-huh. From my understanding, what I heard is, I thought before they moved this campground away that they were supposed to find another spot before they did all this, you know, bringing these trailers in that they got donated.
Surprise.
Closing them down. From my understanding, that it, you know, we were supposed to have a you know, a solved problem, you know, with the homeless, you know, for a place to stay.
You would have thought so, wouldn't you? You know, that was what I brought up at meeting after meeting of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which is the group that owns the property and that has decided to supplant the campground with a 48-person, 10-trailer project, a $1 million project. I kept saying, don't do this. At least give us a guarantee you won't do it until there is an alternate place for people to sleep. I mean, city council is making noises, and you heard, I don't know, you probably can't hear the radio station where you are, right?
Yeah, I'm in my friend Cosmo's room.
Can you hear it?
Yeah.
Oh, you have been able to. Well, then you may have heard earlier Crossroads' Chris Brazda, a homeless activist, talk about how, you know, the city council is really concerned about establishing an open-air shelter and establishing a campground. But the fact is they haven't found a place yet, and there is no place at the moment. There's just talk about a place. So, no, unfortunately, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and that is the reason I opposed their permit, the main reason, though there were other reasons as well, but the main reason was I opposed their permit for this trailer project because a trailer project is going to go right on top of a campground area and there is no alternate place for people to be. And it seems like I'm one of the few people in town who is opposing it because Save Our Shelters, which is the group of campers who are now the River Street refugees headed by Barb Riverwoman and Sherry Connable, are now apparently trying to team up with the Citizens Committee for the Homeless in order to get a campground from the county. And in a certain sense, this makes some sense because, you know, you want to put the pressure on the people who have the money, and certainly the county has money and who have some resources. and the county has more property and space, so presumably they could, you know, more easily do a campground than the city in that sense. And also the Citizens Committee for the Homeless has run the local city services, and they have a lot of, they have a certain amount of clout, and they have a number of people they've got on their phone and mailing lists, and that's true. But of course, what you're doing is you're asking people to make a priority of establishing a campground, the same people who have decided not to establish a campground, you know, who have decided to close down the only campground. And you're also coming to people who have broken their word to campers as recently as December. It's a kind of a touchy question, and actually it's one I want to put out to you and the other listeners on the show. Should those concerned with this issue form a coalition with the Citizens Committee for the Homeless to pressure the county to establish a campground, or should we continue or to pressure the Citizens Committee for the Homeless to hold off on its program, or should we do both?
I think you should do both. I think you need to do something to get a place to stay, you know, for these people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm lucky this year. I'm able to live indoors, you know, which I'm really grateful.
But you were homeless at the time, as I remember.
I was homeless for a long, most of my life. And I did what I've done, you know, out of my heart for people, you know, because I really care, mm-hmm. you know. And it's a shame the way it's going, you know. I think there's got to be some kind of solution, you know. There's got to be something done, you know. And, you know, this harassing and, you know, the homeless is not good. It's not working, you know. It's causing a lot of resentment.
Now, are there any particular projects that you're working on or you'd like to be working on that you want to discuss at this time? I know you and I talked about a number of things, and you were kind of mulling things over and trying to figure out when would be the appropriate time to go public with some issues, and I don't want to press you, but you did have some issues that you might want to be discussing. Would now be the time, or are you thinking of still mulling that stuff over?
I need to write down what I need to say and, you know, figure out what's appropriate, because I don't think right now is a good time. You know, I do want to get involved in helping the mentally ill. I think the mentally ill are getting pushed around, you know.
So
by a lot of, just not, you know, homeless people or criminals, by programs too.
Would you be interested in having people who are designated mentally ill or who have witnessed this kind of incident give you a call if they feel that